Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
Welcome to Trending. Don, last week or a couple weeks ago, I was sitting here at a coffee shop, and I'm trying to play this card game with my sister, and I keep hearing things in the conversation next to me, and they start talking about a hospital close to where I grew up, a Catholic hospital, and they're talking about birthing locations, and for some reason, my attention keeps getting drawn to eavesdropping.
You don't mean to be eavesdropping. They're just talking right in your ear. I understand. It happens.
Well, and get this. You know, there is a Asian woman that doesn't speak English, a woman that's translating for this one Asian woman, and then another woman who just white skin, blonde hair, seems to work in the medical profession. Well, what I end up figuring out as the conversation continues to go on is that the one woman who does not speak English is looking at becoming a surrogate mother.
Oh.
Well, you know, one of those moments, a surrogate mother, but it's not her child. And this one woman, the blonde woman, is trying to convince her and get her to stop kind of asking all these questions about insurance and who covers what, and is just trying to get her to commit to the bottom line of becoming a surrogate mother.
Wow.
And I just couldn't believe it, Don, as we're sitting here. We're taking advantage. She was taking advantage and preying on this woman who doesn't speak English.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder what the backstory would be to that,
right?
That obviously there's going to be some financial incentive. And what is the pressure being put on the Asian lady? Oh, man.
I couldn't believe it. I'm sitting here. And I remember when I first learned what surrogacy was, my mom was actually talking about it. We were at a mall and there were a bunch of women who were Asian and pregnant and they were all walking by. And she ended up telling me, this was many years ago, early on in high school. And she said, oh my gosh, she was really creeped out. And she said, look at those women. She said, I think they're surrogates. And I said, what? And she said, that's just too weird to see so many all at once. And kind of overhearing different conversations, we were pretty sure that they were surrogates. And it just continues to come back to, you know, sometimes people who migrate here to the United States, who maybe are not strong on the language, can be preyed on for this industry that is so destructive of human life. And I couldn't believe that this poor woman was being taken advantage of.
Yeah, definitely being used, right?
Right.
That's what we strive against in the sex industry.
Right.
But this seems like almost an offshoot of that.
It's an offshoot. Yeah.
Yeah,
and you know, I know, like, being on Facebook, when you log on, for me personally, there's always this button on the side of my screen, an advertisement saying, hey, dancers, donate your eggs to make money, pay off your student loans, get some cash in your pocket. And so I know that young people are being preyed on, but there are whole different caveats to this bioethical issue that is life destructive for the embryo and the child, often leading to abortion, but also harvesting your eggs is so damaging to the woman's body.
Yeah, treating people as a commodity, right? Treating the woman as a commodity, treating the baby as a commodity, treating everything is being just put up like on a shopping center. It's like you're going to the store. Oh, I'll take this person. Yeah.
Speaking of going to the store and picking whatever you want, did you hear about the District of Columbia and their new, the new
What craziness is happening in D.C. now, Terry?
Right. You no longer have to put male or female on your driver's license. You can choose to put X, standing for non-binary, if you do not identify as male or female.
What? Now, you know, what's the point of all that? I don't know. Tell me what's happening there. What is the point of putting an X on your driver's license? Is there a reason for this?
X marks the spot, except for it doesn't mark the spot because you can't mark any spot on your body as being biologically male or female. Like, it's so ridiculous. We have to just laugh at this point. It's sad. You know, it's one thing to laugh about it, I think, and kind of you have to have a sense of humor sometimes.
Yeah, up until the point where we're forced into some sort of crazy nonsense. Right. I mean, we're living in 1984 now. I'm thinking back to the classic scene in 1984 where the main character is asked to answer the question, what's 2 + 2? And he says 4. And then the authorities say, no, it's 5. But it's not 5, right? And there's this big back and forth over whether or not he should say 4 or whether he should say 5. He finally submits to 5, and then the authorities are like, well, no. What if we say it's 3? What if we say it's 7? Or what if we say it's whatever, right? And ultimately, the character in 1984 had to say, well, there is no answer. It's whatever you tell me it is.
It's whatever you want. I don't know. 4,
you just
5,
tell me
3.
Whatever. I will submit to the authorities. You tell. And really, the connection between this relativism in our culture, that there is no objective truth, that there is nothing out there that you must conform to or accept or anything like that. Like, it's just a complete free-for-all. The connection between that, and this is one of the major dangers in this, between that and submitting to the authority of some sort of outside power, I think, is what people maybe are not quite aware of. Like, what are we saying when we put an X on our driver's license? It's not going to end up anywhere good, I don't think.
And that's the problem. You know, we have Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, and other states now looking to follow suit. And this is where we're saying there's no such thing as truth. There's no such thing as reality. There is no such thing as God. We have all of these conclusions. I can't even know who or what I am anymore.
And what's going to happen to that child when they get into school and the teacher has to address them? This leads me to another story that's related to this driver's license thing. Recently, there was a letter issued by our current administration stating that teachers and students could be investigated for a civil rights violation if they refuse to use the preferred pronouns of transgendered students. And this goes back to February when the Department of Justice and the Department of Education issued a notice saying that teachers, they must treat kids according to their gender identity, not their biological sex. And if they didn't, they could be pulled up on a civil rights violation.
Well, this is what's confusing, because this was basically a reversal of the mandate of the bathroom mandate and the field trip mandate, saying, hey, you parents, guess what?
Yeah.
Your kids could be sleeping with boys and girls. We don't have to notify you. You can't put up a stink. And they could sleep wherever with whoever they want in the same room, same area right next to each other. And so now, luckily, the Trump administration did reverse this, but still, now this letter that you're saying is being put in place that if you don't use the correct pronoun, if the child feels discriminated against, well, there may be an investigation entering if you do not refer to them as Z, they, whatever it might be.
Well, and there's so many. How are we supposed to know? It's like you can't even address people anymore. Yeah. But this goes back to my previous point about opening ourselves up for some very dangerous civil rights violations against us.
Absolutely.
This is not actually about the civil rights of the so-called transgender kid who wants to be called. Ultimately, this is going to affect those of us who are just trying to live our lives, and we accidentally say, hey, can you come here, please, sir? Or whatever, and now suddenly we're brought up on charges for not addressing the person properly. That's where the real danger lies in this, it seems to me.
Like, I remember I was emceeing an event a year or so ago, and you know how they always refer to the MC, and it stands for the Master of Ceremonies, and they kept talking about the Master of Ceremonies, and I went, well, would I be the mistress of ceremonies? I don't know that I want to be called the mistress of ceremonies.
Right. Well, now what? You're going to be called the Z of ceremonies. You'd be called nothing of ceremonies. The whole thing is sexist, Timory.
How dare they? But here's the bottom line. You know, someone came up to me not too long ago when I was speaking, and I actually get this question quite often. What if someone I know asks me to no longer refer to their children as he or she or so forth? You know what? Respectfully, basically say, hey, I'm going to try to respect you and just call the children by their names. But, you know, I'm sorry, but this is just really confusing. And, you know, kids are either biologically male or female. I'm not trying to argue with you, but you're asking me to do something that goes against nature. And just, you know, just basically say, hey, did you have a boy? Did you have a girl? You know what you had. And just be willing to have that conversation sometimes. They may be mad, but say, you know, I'll just try to call them by Johnny and Susie. Leave it at that.
Your best. Going against nature, though, that's the crux of the issue, isn't it? Is there a nature to go against? And really, on a deeper level, on a philosophical level, maybe I would say even on a spiritual level, the battle is between those who think that there is a nature that we must conform to if we're going to live a fulfilled life, and those who say, no, there is no such thing as a nature that we must conform to. And really, it's, are you your own God? Do you get to create reality for yourself? Or are you a creature? Are you created by someone else? And if you are created by someone else, then you are not the master of your own fate. You are not the master of the universe. You are born into a particular situation, and it's laid out for you then. And this is humbling. I get it, right? But that's the bottom line. It's laid out for you then what your life is, right? Like, if you want happiness, here's the path to it. The other side is, no, I'm not a creature. I'm going to be the master of my own fate. I'm going to be my own creator. I'm going to decide for myself. And really what that is just giving the finger to God, I think, right? Ultimately. It's about rejecting God.
Right. And especially with children, we're opening them up for sexual promiscuity, or just basically exploration of, I don't know what I am, so I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to mess around essentially with my body, which is what's happening to these kids.
Absolutely.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending with Dawn and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
So I have a couple of TV watching rules that some people may be surprised by, Timmery.
Really?
I have never, ever let my kids watch the Disney Channel.
No, ever.
Ever.
No way.
Ever. I've always hated the Disney Channel.
Really?
And it's not that I spent a ton of time watching it either, but I just watched enough snippets over the years to know that this is nonsense. This is, in fact, bad for kids, bad for me watching it, and it would just make me angry.
How old is your oldest? I'm just curious to put this in
perspective. My oldest is 16.
Okay, that's interesting, because I grew up watching the Disney Channel, loved it. As I got older into my teens, of course, not really the age to be watching it, I increasingly grew frustrated by the way characters interacted on Disney. So I understand it now. If you were part of maybe a little bit older, I didn't see so problematic.
So that makes sense, because I wouldn't have been. So when you were young, little, watching it, that wouldn't have been me. But when you're hitting your tweens and teenage years, that's when I would have been turning it on, because the kids are like, well, what can we watch? And I'll tell you what, not a heck of a lot.
Wow, that's so sad.
Oh, the kids were so... okay, so a couple things.
I'm mourning my teenage movies, Xenon Girl, The 21st Century, Luck of the Irish. I mean, these movies were so good.
Could you watch them now and say that, Timmery?
Oh, man, I don't know. And here's the thing, Xenon Girl, The 21st Century, I love that movie. And they had these little devices in their hands. And guess what happened on it, Dawn? They could actually see the other person on video on these devices. And I remember being a little kid going, that's never going to be possible. That's amazing. You can just hold up your device.
That's awesome.
And now we have FaceTime.
There you go. So this is different than Xenu, the
Xenon Girl, the 21st Century.
Because wasn't Xenu like a fighting princess or something? This is
different. Yeah, that's something different.
Xenu, Xenon. Xena, I don't know. Anyway, a couple reasons I always disliked the Disney Channel. The kids were constantly just snarky, nasty to each other, just like not polite, not nice kids. And I didn't want my kids acting like that and thinking they should treat others like that. And this has frankly moved way beyond the Disney Channel now.
Oh,
I mean, again,
yeah.
There's very little that I let my six-year-old watch for this very reason. I mean, she has a little snark already in her. You know, she's like that little girl. Like, I'm not giving you any fuel to that fire, because she'll grab onto that and talk back and all the rest of it. And the other thing was, and this is not something that was just on the Disney Channel, but I found across the board, frankly, the disrespect for parents, and in particular, fathers.
Yes.
Fathers were just highly disregarded.
It's that kid power, the kid power attitude to a lot of the Disney TV shows. Remember, my mom explained it that way. It's kid power. That's attitude. But it's transitioned into this total disrespect.
Yeah, it's not just that kids know best, which is bad enough. And this is a common theme, not only Disney Channel, but really it's you're hard pressed to find a movie or a TV show now that has children in it where children aren't the wise ones, right? Mm-hmm. Where the adults are sort of the buffoons and they're the idiots. And we really need the kid to come in there and show them what the right thing to do, you know, show them how not to be racist, or show them how to be smart, or show them, right? It's always the kid that comes in and is the really wise one, which is, of course, contrary to reality, or at least traditionally it should be, right? Like, you grow up, you mature, you teach your kids how to be wise.
I don't know. I think I always knew best. I'm kidding.
Of course. But then, just especially fathers, it seems like, yes. I mean, from Homer Simpson on, I mean, and Homer Simpson was not the first, but he's sort of the epitome now of the buffoon dad. Like, hopefully the wife is sort of at least a little bit more reasonable, but the dad is always treated as an idiot. Like, this guy just is the, I mean, when I grew up, I guess it was National Lampoon's Vacation. I know you probably, that's probably,
yes, beyond. I remember that.
Yeah. Know. Chevy Chase is the idiot dad, but this was a common theme. Like, in fact, that's another good example of the kids being the wise one and the mom sort of putting up with the buffoonery of dad.
Yes.
Well, now, this story we've got in front of us from the New York Post called How Disney Teaches Contempt for Dads. They say every 3.24 minutes on the Disney Channel, a dad acts like a buffoon.
This is a study coming out of Brigham Young University, friends up in Utah, among other places. And as they're showing this, Don, it's true. There are every few seconds, it feels like, it doesn't even feel like every few minutes, there's not only a joke at the expense of the parents, in particular the dad, but the dad does something to merit it in the show.
Yeah, right. The dad is the idiot. It's not like, yeah, he's being unjustly treated. No, no, no. The dad acts like an idiot and is treated as such. And this has increased sharply over the years. In fact, a study done by the Journal of Broadcasting and Electronic Media found that there was a joke at the father's expense 1.8 times in the 1950s. 1.8 times per episode. You could find a joke. And I suspect that went along with a joke at everybody else's expense, right?
Right.
Now, it's actually only in 1990, it was up to 4.29 times per episode.
Four times more.
Four, yeah, and a half times more. And now that's got to be exponentially higher. Because
20
frankly,
years later,
yeah,
than
20
the
years
90s.
Later now, yeah, it, think of any show you watch, the dad is going to be the idiot.
Yes, he's consistently doing something that it's not that it's funny, it's that it's something that's stupid that is done. And I think that that's the difference, and it continues to show, well, parents don't know anything. You don't have to respect your parents. You don't have to respect their moral views, their rules, their religious views, because everything that they know is old-fashioned. It's wrong. It's not important. And, you know, I think that part of this ties into, you also have kids who are experiencing, their parents had gone through a divorce. They're already upset with their parents. They already think their parents made a big mistake and the kids are correct, you know, most of the cases. And now you add on this layer of television. It, in a sense, is appealing to how kids are already thinking naturally.
Yeah.
And then you add the divorce culture and everything else. It's creating a really big problem with teenage young children disrespect.
Yeah, you've got the family breaking down quickly enough, as,
yes,
you said, right? We've got enough problems in the family. And of course, the idea of a youngster finding their own way and rebelling a bit against the parents. I mean, that's not new necessarily. However, it has been ratcheted up in the past several decades, mm-hmm, to a point I suspect unforeseen in human society, frankly.
Absolutely.
And because of the freedom and the power and the money that kids now actually have access to, Like in the past, all right, so you're a rebellious teenager. Well, what are you going to do? You're going to run away from dad's farm and, you know, right? I mean, actually.
Sure, run down the road and sleep in the rain.
We had such a stronger community and such a lack of ability to really go forge your own path in the past. Now, yeah, hey, the kid, you've got all sorts of power. You can do whatever you want. But what would you say is behind the anti-father attitude? Again, I think that's a spiritual battle. That's ultimately satanic.
Well, I think that it has to do with a breakdown in terms of feminism. It has to do with women, girls rule, kids know better, kids have been through so much, we need to uphold them. But when you appeal to that satanic element, the breakdown of the family, I think it's also a rejection of God. We learn about God the Father through our earthly fathers and through our mothers, through both and the way they interact together and how they give to us. But in particular, something special about the way the Father sacrifices, the way the Father leads. And I'm not saying that we're all obedient to the Father, but his strength in who he is, not physically necessarily, the strength in how he leads with his virtuous strength. These teach us something about God. They teach us unconditional love. Both our parents do. But in particular, when we break down who that father is and the respect for them, we have no respect for any authority or rule setter whatsoever.
You're exactly right about this. And that is why I don't shy away from using the term satanic, because that is ultimately what it's about. It's about getting that break between people and God the Father. And if you look at, just sociologically, if you look at the stats, unbelievers, those who have, you know, like a strong atheistic bent or just an unbelieving bent, the relationship between that and having either an absent father or a bad father is very strong.
Absolutely. Same, and I'm sorry it's not popular to say this, but same in the community of those who have experienced same-sex attraction and gender dysphoria.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a breakdown in the family, especially with that father figure.
And ultimately, that's what all of these things are about. I mean, we spent a lot of time on the show talking about the gender stuff and a lot of time talking about sex and family breakdown. I mean, because it's so essential to our relationship with God. That's what this is all about. I mean, the battle raging in our culture is a spiritual one. It's between Satan and God, and these are all just manifestations of that spiritual battle.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, it's funny because I'm sitting here thinking about bringing it back to the Disney TV shows. I grew up loving the show Boy Meets World. I watched it when it was still airing live, and then I've watched probably every rerun multiple times growing up. Well, when Disney launched Girl Meets World a few years ago, I was the little kid in me coming out. I was so excited. I went and found it online. I watched one episode, nearly turned it off in the middle. The child was so disrespectful. The parents looked like such idiots up there. I tried a second episode going, okay, let's try. Let's just try. I couldn't. I haven't watched another episode since that second one.
I haven't seen any of this, but isn't Ben Savage the boy from Boy Meets
World? They bring back.
So his character now has become a dad?
Yeah, Corey and Topanga, the parents.
Okay,
now.
Okay. Yeah. See, because I did watch a little bit of that way back in the day. But now he's an idiot. So all the maturation process of Boy Meets World apparently was for nothing.
It was for nothing. And that's what's so disappointing. Yeah. So I think that no one's wrong in saying, hey, your kids can't watch a Disney channel. They might not understand it, but it changes the dynamic
in your home. Yeah, I would say be careful when they watch that, because it's not for nothing.
Yes.
That those attitudes do come through. You will get an emotional response from that. So, yeah, be careful what your kids watch.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timmery on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DonJohnsonMinistries.org or Timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
When talking about the sexual lives of teenagers, there's something that people on all sides of the various political and social divides actually agree on, and that's that we don't really want teenagers getting pregnant. Right? I mean, both sides are like, yeah, we want to reduce that. We don't want young girls getting pregnant when they're not ready to be mothers. And so, yay. right? Something we agree on. What we disagree on is how to handle this. And of course, the societal norm is, well, we have to have more sex ed. We've got to have more contraception. We've got to be handing out condoms in schools. We've got to be with the bananas so that they can figure out how to put them on. And we've got to be talking about sex when these kids are like 6 years old, because then they'll know how not to get pregnant. And the pro-life side has, at least those of us in Catholic circles who are also wary of contraception, we say, you know what? No, that doesn't work. Actually, all that does is increase sexual activity, and you end up with more pregnancies, ultimately. Well, a new study has come out, and really the most exhaustive one, Timory, and this shows that, in fact, those of us on the Catholic pro-life side have been right all along.
We've been right. We're seeing consistently that during the 2008 downturn in the economy throughout Great Britain, there was a change in how sex ed was approached. Great Britain back in 1990s into 99, what they saw is that they had some of the highest teen pregnancy rates. What then happened is they ended up implementing a rigorous sex education program and including contraception education. A lot of the time during these, they even give out free contraception sponsored by different programs. We see the same thing that happens here in the U.S. Well, what happened is in 2008, a lot of those budgets were cut for the sex ed program and the contraception. What they saw is that Great Britain maintained their high levels of teen pregnancy and sexual activity, even after they implemented the sex ed program and contraception. Well, 2008 hits, guess what happens? The budget's cut. Teen pregnancy significantly drops.
Yeah, this inadvertently provided us with one of the most rigorously scientific approaches to studying whether or not sex ed works. So they had all this money in Great Britain. $454 million was spent. They were forcing each school district to implement this study, giving them the money to do so. When the budget crisis hit, like you talked about in 2008, certain school districts then were given the freedom to opt out. So if you don't want to keep doing this, we're not giving you money from the government to do this. And so if you don't want to do it, you don't have to. And so what happened was certain school districts said, well, yeah, we don't have the money. We're not coming up with it on our own. So we're going to stop the sex ed. Other school districts kept going with the same sex ed. And so you can now easily compare, all right, what happened in those school districts where they continued with the rigorous sex ed and the contraception teaching, and what happened in those school districts that didn't. And what happened was those school districts that stopped doing the sex ed, teenage pregnancy and abortion rates fell by over 40%.
Almost half.
Yeah.
In 2008 to 2014, I couldn't believe it. You dropped the funding of sexually educated programs and contraception. You see a drop in teenagers having sex. Because guess what? You're no longer teaching them how to do it, how it's more pleasurable, how to quote unquote be protected. Guess what? I worked in crisis pregnancy centers, and these kids, Don, do not understand how to use their contraception correctly.
Well, and on top of that, do we really want them thinking about it every single... I mean, they think about it enough. Do we really want a class every day? Let's think about this some more. Let's keep this at the forefront of your minds. No, we don't.
Well, and it's so frustrating because what happens is we overly sexualize these teenagers too soon. Not too long ago, there in a community very close to me, there was a huge problem among the middle school kids. I have a lot of these middle school kids I was interacting with, and there was this high level of anxiety. There was a high level of all of a sudden depression. They're depressed this week. They can't participate in their events, and parents were allowing them to get out of participating in all these different extracurricular activities. They get to stay home. They need to stay close to their parents. And guess what was happening those exact same 2 weeks?
I have no idea.
They were in the middle of the rigorous comprehensive sex education for the teenagers. The teenagers were overwhelmed. And this is middle school, actually. Overwhelmed. Wow. Some of them were even exposed to too much too soon. That middle school age, I know being a chastity speaker, you get middle school kids. You have some kids still playing with their dolls and some kids who are already sexually active. And you somehow have to appeal to both of those groups. Well, when you teach them how to do it and how it's more pleasurable, and not only that, in San Diego right now, Don, they've changed and re-emphasized the sex education program, and they're pushing on them how to enjoy more of a pleasurable element. And here's where you need to go. Planned Parenthood. You have any question, you can go through the school to Planned Parenthood, and your parent doesn't need to know anything about it.
Yeah, this is so evil. And as a father of a high schooler and a middle schooler, you're exactly right. Like, it's such a hard time, a fragile time for these young women. And you're right. They go between playing with dolls and thinking about sex. You can do that in the same day, right? And you don't want, and they're curious. It's just evil to be forcing this stuff on them. And so it turns out we've been right all along on the pro-life side. Here's another stat. In 2011, University of Michigan did a study of oral contraception on campus health centers, and indeed, it actually increased fertility rates the more condoms they handed out. Oh, surprise. That's a shock.
Right. Because guess what? Condoms are 100% effective.
Contraception,
you don't use them, right?
That's the other thing, right? It doesn't work.
Right.
It just doesn't work.
I'm sorry, people. Condoms don't completely keep you safe from sexually transmitted diseases. There's still skin-on-skin contact. And I know it's vulgar for some people, but people think, oh, well, at least they're using a condom. And I go, oh, dear.
Yeah,
they may not be pumping hormones into their body that drastically impact and harm the woman. And yeah, also using contraception can cause an abortion as well when it's working as an abortifacient, because it doesn't prevent the sperm and egg from meeting, but actually destroys that life and prevents it from implanting properly in the womb. And so, yeah, sure, people will say, well, at least they're just using condoms. Well, you're still presenting a sexual landscape for these kids to experiment, mess around. You're also exposing them to high levels of lifelong STDs sometimes. And let me tell you a story, Dawn. We had a girl come into the crisis pregnancy center a few years ago. I share this story in a lot of the talks I give because I don't like to go in depth into the different types of STDs. Basically, what happened, this woman comes in, she ends up choosing life for her child. She brings the baby in after having had it. The baby makes no noise. Over and over again, she says, is something wrong with my baby? It doesn't even cry. And we said, you should probably go check in with a doctor. Doctor takes her a couple times, says, you just have a good baby. Don't worry about it. Eventually, Dawn, come on. Every teenager, like any kid over 8, says something's wrong with the baby when I'm speaking.
Yeah.
Well, sure enough, this baby ended up having HPV on his throat. He had contracted it going through the birth canal of the mother. Oh. She had no idea that she was a carrier of HPV. And she said, not only does this woman not know who her child's father is, could be any number of 5 different men, but now this baby has HPV. Now, the miracle is that the baby was going to have to go in month after or every few months for a removal of basically the tumors growing on his throat. After a couple operations, miraculously, and through a lot of prayer, the HPV stopped growing in the baby's throat, and he was learning sign language, and baby ended up coming out of this. But it shows these long-term consequences that young women, and this girl even said, I thought I was just having fun and enjoying things. Hmm. I had no idea my choices would deny my child of a father and would then cause this child to have HPV.
Wow. Yeah, don't give in to the whole notion that, oh, well, the kids are going to have sex anyway. At least they should do it in a safe... No. It's denigrating to the young people to think that they don't possibly have the self-control within them to not have sex. No, they can do it. We shouldn't succumb, especially when it's just so dangerous, so bad for them on so many levels to go out and have sex as teenagers.
the bottom line here, when we see a decrease in abortion teen pregnancy where sex education programs have been removed in the schools, it brings it back to the fact that we know we have to have self-control of our bodies. It brings back the idea that a school education board shouldn't be the ones deciding how teenagers are educated on sexuality. You as a parent, it's an uncomfortable topic, but you've got to talk to your kids, send them to a good class or something to talk about their sexuality at the appropriate age.
From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Dawn and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Dawn, I had a really baffling experience that continues to happen over and over again. I have clients coming in with these big, beautiful, new engagement-esque looking rings.
Okay.
They're around the boomer age range, so a little bit older, a little more...
Like 60s, 70s?
60s, early, mid, or kind of later 50s
okay.
as well.
Sure.
So you're seeing a lot of boomers coming in, and these clients have these beautiful new rings, and I'll say, oh, are you engaged, or did you just get married? Oh, my boyfriend and I just moved in together. And first of all, right away, I'm like, are you too old for that? I'm sorry.
Right.
I just think, aren't you too old for that? But second, what ends up coming out, Dawn, and I've been really surprised, well, we like to get married, but we wouldn't get married because then I would lose my social security or he would lose his social security. And so instead, they're pretending that they're married.
Yeah, this is part of an interesting trend. I want to talk about the Social Security stuff in a minute, but let's just look at some of these numbers, because this story from the Pew Research shows that your Pilates folks are not the only ones. The rate of people who are living together without being married, cohabitors, over the age of 50 has shot up a ton.
There has been a 75% increase, a huge jump in the number of them shacking up.
So what would be some of the reasons for doing this? Again, let's get to that federal funding one. They don't want to lose their money. But obviously, there's a lot of single older people. It seems like maybe more so in the past due to things like divorce, I suspect. Mm-hmm. That would be a big one. Obviously, I mean, widowers, we've always had widowers with us and older people. But it seems like this increase would have to account for more than that. This is not just people who have lost a spouse. This is people who have got divorced. And of course, I think empirically, we just know that. We know that there's a lot of broken families out there, a lot of divorce that has happened. Yeah. You end up with a lot of single older folks. And especially with the way that families have spread out over the country and they're just not together like they used to, that's tough. For older folks, you're growing up essentially by yourself. You don't want to be, so you're looking for someone to live with.
We're looking for someone to be with. And I think that loneliness component that you're talking about, you know, one, we're also talking about the generation that came out of the sexual revolution.
Yeah.
This is a generation that intentionally didn't have children. Many who intentionally chose to be sterilized. Many who had years of hormonal contraception use and couldn't have children. Later on, I have a number of people, especially when I'm flying all over the country, I meet people randomly, end up sharing their life stories. I think it's because I don't put headphones in and I'm... Hi, how are you?
Yeah.
But what I hear is that I don't have any children. We would have loved to have children. Mm. But, you know, I had taken hormonal contraception for years or all these different things. And some people who just can't have children, so we can't judge why they don't have them. I think that's important because that's a deep, deep wound that some people carry. But not having children or having fewer, the other thing that stands out to me, Dawn, is like you said, we're not as close to our families as we used to be. I have family members outside my grandparents who, you know, my parents moved right smack dab in between both sets of grandparents, partially so that they could help with whatever was needed.
Yeah.
But also we have aunts and uncles who have experienced same-sex attraction, years of this, and it breaks my heart because guess what? These are the ones who have no one to care for them.
Yeah, that's the fruit of having the families being so small and mobile, is that you grow up and you want to get together for whatever. But a lot of times, you hardly ever get together. Whereas in the past, it would be like, well, you're living down the street or the next farm over or whatever. And, you know, we've talked about that before. The disintegration of the family is more than just psychological or emotional. Physically, it plays a big part. And so now we have all these boomers, biggest generation in the history of America, getting older, and they don't have the families to be there to support them. So they are shacking up.
Absolutely. And a lot of them are still in the process of retiring. A lot of them are yet to retire. We have a number of years ahead of us of retiring boomers. They've just barely started to retire. And here's the thing. Guess what? If you're single, it's more cost effective to be living with someone, share the expenses, the requirements of upholding or upkeeping a household, right? It's a lot less expensive, and it's nicer when you have someone to do something with.
Right. Now, let's talk about this government thing. So they are holding off becoming married because that would decrease the amount of money they're getting from Social Security. And I think you'll find, if you look at most government programs, they are intended to do something, but they always have unintended consequences. And so the heart, if you will, behind a government program like Social Security is to make sure that we don't have destitute older people, right?
Yes.
Yeah, fair enough, right? We get that. So as a society, we are going to give our tax money and we're going to have the government hand out that tax money to people who need it. One of the unintended, I would suggest, I don't think this was ever an intention, but it certainly happens. One of the unintended consequences of that is that you decrease older people getting married because they're going to get less money. Mm-hmm. One of the other places this kind of thing shows up is with younger people.
Yes.
And dissuading them from getting married. And this, I think, is a bigger problem. Obviously, it'd be great for these older people to get married. Marriage is a sacrament. Yes, you should go do that. But it's a huge, huge problem for younger women. And this has been devastating to, for instance, poor urban communities where marriage has been dissuaded by the way that government money gets handed out in these younger communities. It's more cost effective for a young girl to, one, have a baby and then get paid for
exactly.
it and then not have the husband there because you get more money. You're dissuading the husband from taking part
right.
because the money gets less if he were to take responsibility. You don't want them making too much money. And in fact, we don't want to get too far afield here, but some of the things that are messing up some of these studies on the minimum wage is that people want less working hours when the wage goes up because it affects the government money that they're getting.
Absolutely.
I don't want to work too much because then I'm not going to get my check from the government.
And we would see this all the time with the girls who would come into the crisis pregnancy center. We would be the voice of faith and reason talking about getting married, having support of the father and the baby's life. As the girl is going, I don't get my financial support along with this baby if I am married to this man. But guess what? The man doesn't make the commitment. The woman pushes him away from making the commitment of being a father and a spouse. If the father doesn't have that commitment, if he doesn't have something drawing him into lifelong sacrifice, the father will not stick around.
And the government programs have dissuaded him from doing so. And this has been long seen. Not anything new. Robert Byrd did a huge study on this back in the 70s, the devastation that social yeah. welfare programs were having in inner cities, for example.
Right.
Yet we continue to do it. And now we've sort of spread that, I think, beyond the inner cities. And so when you think about what should the government be doing for me or for others, mm-hmm. be very careful about that, because government programs often, although they have, again, the right heart, if you will, like, oh, well, we want to help out, you know, a poor young teenage woman. We want to get her some government money. But what are some of the unintended consequences of that? And can we be more effective at helping that young woman apart from some of these state-run things? Because the state-run things, often, they're not going to have the same effect as, you know, your crisis pregnancy center.
Right.
Especially they're if not, that is compounded with yeah. all of the rest of the assets, if you will,
Absolutely.
That the Catholic Church has.
Well, and this is the attitude of the Church has of subsidiarity.
Yeah.
When we understand subsidiarity different as a culture as opposed to the Church's teaching on subsidiarity. Subsidiarity is that local communities, local government helps with local problems because they better understand how to help them. They have better resources, more effective in that area, versus big government can be disinterested, far away. They don't know the need of this woman here in the crisis pregnancy in her specific situation, not just materially, but psychologically, emotionally. A lot of these women who end up in crisis pregnancies have a past that they need counseling through. They need mentorship through. And, you know, coming back, you know, kind of switching back a little bit here, I want to talk a little bit about whether or not this is problematic for older people, boomers, who are shacking up now, and what we can do as well. Because you mentioned that it's a bigger problem with young people. I think we view it as a bigger problem because we see it as long term.
Right.
But from a salvific perspective, we're creating a real problem with people who might have lived very virtuous, good lives, who are now entering into relationships that are not marriages.
And doesn't this present then quite a mission field, if you will, quite a group of people, these boomers, the biggest segment of our society, now entering into sinful relationships, ones that we know are going to be harmful for them. As a church, you're right, I talk about the young people a lot. I'm more focused on them. But yeah, this presents a great opportunity for us to step in there in the same way as we've had crisis pregnancy centers. Maybe we need to be focusing more on this older generation.
I think we definitely need to be aware, if we are sitting back and allowing older people, just because they're older, to think, oh, well, it's fine if they just shack up now. It doesn't matter the way it would when they're younger. I know some people who are in this generation right now who have led pretty upstanding lives, who worked hard, who are maybe widowed or had a later divorce in their life. And, you know, they really need to work kind of reconciling with the church and not entering into a new relationship. What we're seeing is that a lot of these people are now all of a sudden going, it's okay if I just move in and live with this person. And we're putting ourselves essentially on a path to potentially separating ourselves from the kingdom of heaven.
This has been Trending with Dawn and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. Trending. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.